Hello and welcome to Cider Voice. This is the CiderCon wrap-up episode. I'm Albert, and I loved being at the event, and I'm joined by someone else who loved being at the event, the best panel host in town, Adam Wells.
Hello. Adam. Yeah, I'm well. It was an amazing experience. And here we go. I've been joined by our third host, Norman, who's going to contribute some woofs, which will still be just as much as Justin does in this episode.
I think, yeah, just keep stroking him and then he won't make too much noise. Yeah.
Okay, he's going to be quiet. But no, CiderCon was incredible. Over the jet lag now, the 8-hour time difference, which took some getting used to in the other direction. But an incredible event. What did you think of it?
Yeah, the whole event was fantastic. For me, the joy of it was just meeting so many people, trying so many ciders, having all my perspectives refreshed by, you know, everyone comes to cider from their own place. And I think that's the real joy of it, that there's so much diversity in methods, in application, in answers people come up with to questions that their fruit is posing them. So it's really cool. One of the highlights as well was meeting so many people who claimed to have listened to the podcast. I didn't actually get any proof from them that they had, but they said they enjoyed it. So big thanks to everyone that came up to us and said that. And we want to hear from you wherever you are in the world. If you're listening to Cider Voice, please do get in touch, comment on our socials, on the website, or send us an email, just albert@cidervoice.com. I'll get your email and we'll read it out on the pod. So Adam, I want to ask you, we're going to try and go through things chronologically a little bit. What was your journey like to getting to CraftCon? Not just in terms of the actual plane, but getting the invite. You know, what's the context behind you going to CiderCon? CiderCon, not CraftCon, honestly. CiderCon is the American cider-making trade conference, and CraftCon is the UK version of it, inspired by it, basically. And I always get the names wrong, so...
But that's good, because what we've done there is work in a plug for CraftCon in an episode about CiderCon. So it's two birds with one stone. CiderCon, like you, Albert, is something that I've just seen from afar. And so you see all of the social media around it, all the big buzz whenever it's going on. You see like the emails and the lead up. And in the 2021 edition, when it was in lockdown, they took it digital. And so we were able to sit in on some of the seminars there. So you got that kind of little taste of what of a fraction of what it might be like. But every year I've been really, really keen to go. And the American Cider Association that runs it, they always put out a request for some panel topic suggestions. And last year, obviously, I was partway through researching and writing the Perry book. So I thought, well, I know Tom's done a talk on Perry, you know, a few years ago now, in 2016, I think. But you know, things have moved on a lot since then, and maybe it would be good to kind of do a talk about the international scene. And I didn't think that anything would come of it, but Michelle got back to me, Michelle McGrath, who was on the pod a few episodes ago, CEO of the American Cider Association. She said, yeah, we love the idea of a Perry talk. Would you like to come over? And I was, yes, please, very much so. And she then suggested that it should be expanded to a panel discussion, which I was really on board with for a couple of reasons. Firstly, because we get more perspectives, we make it a tasting, be able to have a few more people over. But also it meant that my job became miles easier, because I didn't actually have to make that much of a talk. I simply needed to divert all difficult questions towards the panel. And you very kindly said that you would be very up for coming on the panel, along with, well, we had an amazing panel in the end. We had Tom Oliver, who people, listeners to this pod may not know, but he's a quite good up-and-coming Perry maker in Herefordshire. And then we had Natalia from Cider Explorer, who I've wanted to meet for a long time. She's probably the leading cider blogger on continental Europe. And then we also had Laura from Dragon's Head Orchards in Washington, who was somebody whose Perry's had been recommended to me by Tom for years, and I've never had a chance to try. So I was so excited when we kind of came up with this panel, and just really pleased with how it all went down.
Yeah, I think we had a wonderful spread of voices on the panel. Personally, great for me to try Laura's Perry this time, because I'd actually visited Dragon's Head in 2016 just on a personal holiday trip to the States, and it's a fantastic cidery. Laura now running it mainly with Wes in the background, fantastic. And then to have the different perspectives, and Talia, as like yourself, a kind of a more a writer, someone removed from the making of it, someone that can be really fair in their assessments and everything, and then to have a fellow Herefordshire producer next to me was really fun. And, you know, there was 100 people in the room, more or less. So it was a little bit intimidating to start, because you feel, you know, I've dreamt about going to CiderCon for like the last 7 years since I've been doing cider full time. And you finally get the invite to go, and the ACA do the good thing. They fly you out, put you up in the hotel. And so you want to be giving that back. You want to justify that invitation, because it's such a privilege to do. And it was wonderful. We had such great feedback. And we covered a whole lot of topics. The only slight disappointment was that there were one too many questions about sorbitol at the end. When there's a lot more things to Perry
We'd managed to do a whole talk about Perry, a whole panel discussion about International Perry, without anyone talking about, you know, sorbitol and its properties, and then all of the questions at the end.
Yeah, I think you know, to some extent the blame does lie with a certain panelist who enjoys making jokes about poop, but. You know, that's by the by. It was a wonderful session. And whatever sessions did you attend? Is there any that really stick out in your mind as being fascinating?
There were some great ones. I mean, the one that I attended earlier in the day, I mean, I think Tom was just a fixture in that particular panel chair, because he was sitting in exactly the same one at the session I attended at the start of the day, which was about co-fermentations, and specifically they were talking about hybrids. And Tom was the first person asked, you know, what do you think a hybrid is? And his answer immediately was, I don't like the sound of a hybrid. I don't think that sounds very tasty, and I don't want to drink one. Which stitched up the host a little bit. But that was a fantastic topic, actually, and another one with a real international perspective, because we have makers from Sweden on it, as well as America, and obviously England with Tom. So that was really cool. I also went to a really good presentation on the ancestral method that was led by Jan Gilles from Normandy, who is a consultant cider and perry maker over there. Just some amazing topics. But as you say, I mean, one of my favourite bits of the whole conference was just like the conversations that you have around all of that. You know, so many people who I met there, who I've connected with online in the past, or, you know, whose ciders and perries I've seen from afar, but not had a chance to try over here. You know, so it was just a really, really lovely, friendly celebration. And the cider share at the start was a real take home for me, because you had, what, 60 tables or so, maybe more than that, of cideries from, you know, the main room was Northwest Cideries, because we were in Oregon. But then there was also the room that was, well, international ciders, so including yourself, but the delegates from Norway and Sweden, and then all the other parts of the States. And it was amazing to go around, particularly with Natalia as a fellow sort of cider blogger and cider writer, and try all of these different ciders and perries. And, you know, somebody who was on the thing, who's there to speak about perry, and has just kind of been trying to research American perry a bit, it was incredible to see that there actually were a really large number of makers, especially in the Northwest section, who were making some fantastic perries from a whole range of pears. So yeah, a long-winded answer to what I did, but it was all great and an absolute privilege to be there, as you say.
Yeah, we tried one perry from raw cider before the event in a natural wine bar. What admittedly was a rather exorbitant price. Not necessarily the cidery's fault. I think what happens if you buy a drink in a natural wine bar. But it was sensational, and, you know, actually predominantly made with d'Anjou pears, which I don't think really are perry pears. I think dual purpose culinary fruit type deal. But that blended with some classic perry pears as well, and it was very high quality. And there was another one that we stumbled across. Steve Seelin of Southwell Ciders poured it for us in The Place, which is the iconic cider bar of Portland. From, I think, Cameron Hill Wineries, I think was the name of the producer, is that right? Which was also very high quality. And, you know, it's both a remarkable and a kind of unnerving thing when you've flown literally halfway around the world, and you're drinking drinks made from the same varieties as are growing on our farm. That's kind of interesting, and, you know, but it's still a rare thing, right? Because I've only found that drink because I sorted out. They probably only made a couple of hundred bottles. Because for me, you talked there about Tom Oliver and the hybrid panel, and there was another panel on co-ferments, and there were lots of panels on this and that. And what I kind of came to was, you know, as a cider maker, it's not quite imposter syndrome, but you're always wondering, is my product good enough? Is what I'm making good enough? And you know that you love it, but you also worry about seller palate. You think, maybe I love it just because I made it. You've got all these kind of challenges, and you're also competing in the market where nowadays, especially, the question is always, what's new? What's hype? What's driving the market? What's the trend? Do I need to be making alcohol cider? Do I need to be making co-ferments, like this and that? And partly it was just the whole event as a whole, and partly it was a wonderful session I attended with John Bunker on how to identify an apple and thinking about the magical idea that with this rediscovering and working with varieties that were planted by people whose names we might not ever find out, planted on land that has changed hands loads of times or whatever, but the tree has endured, the variety has endured. And, you know, it's just as special to hand someone a drink and say, this is made from flaky bark, or this is made from thorn, or this is made from dabbin, and they go, oh, what's that? I've never heard of that fruit. And yet it happens to be a variety of an apple, but it's still a fruit that they've never tasted, even though it's from that same family.
I think that was a take-home that I had, actually. Well, two take-homes there. Firstly, with regards to you know, what you were saying about your own ciders and stuff, I would say that, I felt like a bit like your entourage at a couple of, you know, Albert was an absolute celebrity. Everyone, we can sort of walk 10 meters without somebody sort of catching his elbow and knowing him and having a chat. And your ciders, you know, it was really noticeable when you opened, you know, anything, whether it's a Fox 12 or the Raison d'Etre or whatever. You know, I remember Rhea, who's for those of our listeners who might not know, is Cider Chat, a much more long-standing podcast than ours, and she had a taste. She went, "Oh yeah, you know, this is we just can't don't quite have this over here." You know, so A, it was fantastic to see your ciders do so well in such good company. But secondly. A, I think there was a real and serious and inspiring amount of conversation around varieties. You know, and in America, they are growing some bittersweet kind of English and French varieties, but they're also, you know, they're enthusing about American varieties there as well, more than I think maybe they have in the past. And we had this conversation a little bit with Michelle a few weeks ago. But just generally, people talking about the varieties of apple and what they do for their cider was a real feature. And maybe that's because all the most enthusiastic people are at CiderCon, right? So those sorts of conversations might not naturally be more prevalent than they would be just generally, but it was something really inspiring to see. And so, yeah, I think there's lots of scope for varieties to just continue to be a cool conversation between UK and US.
Yeah, I think so. Well, you know, for me, one of the things about the surrounding atmosphere of the entire event and what I enjoyed was that I kept seeing the same faces. The things that I was interested in, there were other makers from all across the US and the European makers that were over there as well. And even Takuro from Sona Smith in Japan, we kept seeing the same faces at the events that were, they were like flavor driven. They were cider driven. Mm. They were looking for people sharing their experience of working with amazing fruit and being proud to make drinks out of amazing fruit. And I was saying to Becky, that cider and, you know, cider going outside the bubble is being carried by people who put themselves out there and want to talk about it and are passionate about it and want to share about it and want to tell the stories of these fruit. I was saying to Becky that there's loads of producers in the UK and dozens in the US who make way more cider than we do, but they're just not as passionate about it. And so their story and their social media is sanitized. And yeah, they probably make way more money than we do as well, but they're not the ones that get to have that joy and that experience of sharing cider with other people where it's really meaningful. Mm. And it's a thing that defines who we are, and that this is what we care about, and this is what we find amazing, and this is what brings us happiness. So it was, for me, the highlight was that, being in part of that web of people who are all connected by that shared passion. Adam, what are your takeaways from this CiderCon? I mean, you've got a big year ahead. The book, which is called Perrier Drinker's Guide, is being published by Camera at the start of May. You're going to be giving a keynote speech at CraftCon, which... apologies for the dog. You're giving a keynote speech at CraftCon, which is happening April 5th and 6th. It's a huge start to the year.
It is, yeah. I mean, well, I think CiderCon was kind of just the way to kick that year off, really, because, you know, it was so invigorating. We did meet so many people who were kind of interested in the same things. And like you, you know, I write the articles or whatever on Cider Review or wherever else. And I sometimes feel quite like I'm ploughing a bit of a lonely furrow as a cider writer, because realistically there are you know, other people, you know, I'm certainly not the only cider blogger, but in terms of people who are maybe writing lots of long form articles about cider, you know, you get a couple articles written here or there by people who write predominantly about beer or wine. But especially with James Finch now not writing so much about cider and with things quietening down, yeah, I sometimes think, well, you know, is anyone that bothered by, you know, all this sort of stuff that I'm into? So it was great to speak to people. And as you said, you know, so many people came up and were lovely about Cider Voice, and we had quite a few people coming and mentioning that they read Cider Review as well, which was really, really lovely. So that was invigorating. But on the other hand, it was also seeing, you know, there's so many conversations going on about stuff that I hadn't considered before. There's still, you know, there's still so much that I don't know and that I haven't covered, and there's still so much like to be excited about and to learn. So there was a great start to the year, both from a, you know, very, very kind of ego boosting, but also like humbling and grounding and kind of reinvigorating perspective. So that was great, and hopefully we can kind of build from that, and it'll be another like exciting year for cider. So yeah, thanks very much to the ACA for having us, really.
Absolutely. Thank you very much to the ACA. Thank you to everyone that has listened to Cider Voice on any of our episodes so far. Please do let other people know about the podcast and get in touch. Like I said, it's really encouraging for us to meet those of you that are enjoying it and letting us know. So thanks, everybody. And you'll hear from us next week.
Thank you.
Always got to get in the last word, don't you, mate?